We're glad to get to be here with you. You know, these kids, they grow up so fast, and Malia's growing up very fast, and yesterday, I don't know what it was she was doing, but I was standing in the kitchen, and Michelle was right there beside me, and I'd go to a football game Friday night. When I got home, she had spent a lot of time cleaning up in the house, and the house was clean, and so Saturday morning, the house was clean, and we were there in the kitchen, and I was sort of propped up, leaning against the counter, holding my bowl of cereal, eating my cereal, and watching Malia and Michelle standing there. All of a sudden, I'm feeling something wet on my legs, and I'm just letting milk just pour out of my cereal bowl, and it's collecting there on my pants leg. I've got a little wrinkle in my pants leg, and it's spilling that up, and she starts fussing. Yeah, I can't ever keep anything clean. The floors, I get it clean, and you get it messed up, and it's just I can't keep anything clean around here. Well, I couldn't move. I've got milk puddling in my pants leg, you know, so and then I have to ask her for help. You know, it's one thing if you make a mess, it's another if you have to ask somebody else to clean it up for you. So I couldn't move. It reminded me, I was living at home, 10 years ago, and similar Saturday morning, Mom had cleaned up the house, and I managed to drop a whole gallon of milk on the floor, and the jug burst, and boy, you should have seen that tidal wave of milk rolling across the kitchen. It was terrible. I was calling for help then, too. Needed a lot of help on that one. But the principle goes, you know, we can't keep anything clean indefinitely. We can't keep everything perfect all the time. Everything takes the energy going into it to keep it going right, to keep it going smooth, to keep it like we want it. Nothing's perfect all the time. And it's that way with relationships. It's that way within the church. It's that way within families. It's that way within marriage. Today I want us to talk about some major challenges facing marriage. And this is a spinoff lesson from the topic we talked about last month. If you remember, we talked about Christian development. The idea that is at the core of Christianity is that in each choice we would make, we would choose to please God. Realizing that there are two major hinge pins that our faith swings upon, that being baptism and communion, two commands that Jesus taught. Then after that, looking at the great commandment as our top priority, that we would love God with all of our heart, soul, mind. Some gospels record strength. And then the second commandment that Jesus gave, to love our neighbor as ourself. We're not perfect. We've got to reach for perfection. We've got to stop sinning. And we've got to grow fruitful. All of us as individuals have this as our goal. This is our task. As we relate that to marriage, we can see, again, the concept of pleasing God is central to our faith. Even before marriage, it's important for our young people to strive to please God in their lives. Two principles from Christ is that this union that marriage creates is a union for life. It's a lifelong union. And the relationship, as we can see exemplified by the relationship between Christ and the church, and that Christ gave himself to the church and the church was subject unto Christ. And so together, they worked together. The priorities are the same within marriage. The first thing is each one of us as individuals has to live by the great commandment. Love God with all of our heart, soul, and mind. If we allow the sins of the world to cloud this picture, then we can begin to go off track spiritually. That will also impact the marriage. The second commandment, love your neighbor as yourself. Your spouse is your neighbor, the closest neighbor to you. Reaching for perfection. Stop sinning. And realize that the other person may sin. Forgive quickly. Forgive completely. Don't hold grudges. Let go of those things of the past. And then grow fruitful in the relationship. Show Christ in all aspects of the relationship. Child rearing, finances, fellowship, church attendance, those type of things. These are principles that we can see within a marriage that if we can build upon those things, we'll be very sound. But what are some problems that would cause trouble? Today, we want to talk about three. We don't have time to talk about all the dozens of things that can happen, but three issues. We want to talk about communication. We want to talk about leave and cleave. And we want to talk about money. So let's begin. Communication. In Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6, let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. Well, I don't want to try to be cute with Michelle, but, you know, when she was fussing on me about that milk yesterday, I don't know if that was seasoned with grace or not. But we want to be careful how we talk to people, especially when it's critical issues, touchy issues. We want to be careful how we talk. We want to be careful what we say, that you may know how you ought to answer every man, because we have a goal in mind of what we want to accomplish. We don't want to just have an argument. We don't want to yell and shout. What we really want to do is, if something is an issue where two different people within a relationship have different opinions, we want to have a conversation in such a way that we can find out why the other person thinks the way they do and maybe persuade them to our point of view, or to be open enough to the conversation that we, if we are wrong, can be persuaded ourselves. Matthew 12:34-35. O generation of vipers, how can ye, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart the mouth speaketh. A good man out of the good treasure of the heart bringeth forth good things, and an evil man out of the evil treasure bringeth forth evil things. It's out of the heart we speak. That's where it comes from. So if we're angry, if we get angry quickly, if we get angry over the little bitty things and blow up, then there's within the heart a deeper issue. It's out of the heart that we speak. What drives us? What leads us to action? Well, we hinted at it just then. You see, we will see something or hear something. We will hear someone say something, we'll watch them do something, and then immediately we'll tell ourselves a story in our mind. Oh, that's what he's doing. That's what she meant. That's what, I know what he's up to now. She's just trying to get in good with me so she can get something else. You know, we begin to tell these stories. And those stories generate feelings within us. It stirs up those emotions that we've been having for 6 months. It stirs up those emotions we've been having for 6 years. And then we act on the feelings. Sometimes we overreact. Well, the biggest problem with this is when we see something and we tell a story, we're interpreting that event based on the things that's already in our mind, the things that are already in our heart. Sometimes we put in a filter. You know, as kids, we learn slang language and we learn foul language in elementary school. And we learn not to say those things when mom and daddy gets on to us for it. You know, you don't learn those things till you use those words in the wrong place and get your hand swatted or worse. Okay? We learn not to say those things. But sometimes people carry those words around in their heart and in their mind, and without thinking sometimes they'll do something, break something, hurt something, pour milk down their leg. And I didn't say anything ugly yesterday. But sometimes we'll say things inappropriately, and it's coming out of the heart because it was already in there. Sometimes we put this filter in place and we catch those words, and sometimes they come on through. Now, if they're in your heart and they come out, you know that they're in your heart. But you know what? That filter, as sophisticated as it might be, is not going to solve every problem in the world. And so what we've really got to work on is the heart. We've got to work on this area right here where we tell a story. When we see someone do something, when we hear someone say something, then we've got to work on, okay, what's going on in here? What's going on in my heart? What am I doing to try to avoid my own emotions escalating? Because what a conversation is all about is that we would communicate and that we would reach this place where we can talk to the other person, and the other person can look us in the eye, and we can know that that person's listening to what we're saying. We can know that that person is paying attention to what we're saying, that they're hearing us, they're processing what we're talking about, and that hopefully we're persuading them to our way of thinking. That's what we're striving for. That's dialogue. The only way that can happen is if we have safety in that conversation. If the other person feels like we're pushing them around, if the other person feels like we're dominating, if the other person's thinking that we're only trying to get our way, then they're going to put up their defenses. And sometimes that could be withdrawing, avoiding, masking, where they would kind of go into silence. Or maybe it's that they get on the attack and they start trying to control and manipulate. Or maybe they're going to label you and say, oh, you're just like your mother. You're just like your father. You're just like your brother. All you're doing is acting the same way you've acted all these years. All you're trying to do, you know, you understand what's happening there. They're on the attack. Okay? What happens is they don't feel safe. He or she does not feel safe. And so we're not going to have dialogue because they put up their defenses. So what we have to do, friends, is we've got to learn what's in our heart. We've got to be careful with what's in our heart so that when we have a conversation, we are able to approach this conversation on a sticky subject and say, hey, I know that I've done wrong, I've contributed to this, but let's talk about this situation and see if we can resolve this issue. Okay? If we're tactful enough, then we won't, because that person's got the same path to action going, that person is going to see our actions, and hopefully they're going to tell themselves a story and say, you know, Chance, he's being serious right now. He's being honest. He's not wanting to attack me. He's not wanting to undermine me. And these feelings are going to think, they're not going to be angry feelings. They're not going to be, oh, just sull up, be quiet feelings. These feelings are going to be open-minded. And hopefully we can have a good conversation and resolve issues within the marriage. But in so many instances, it's what's in the heart that causes the problems to start with. And what's in the heart also causes trouble with communication. To see a biblical example of the effective communication in action, we're not going to take time now, but read the story of Daniel in Daniel chapter 1. And look how a captive, a prisoner of war, was able to change the commandment of a king by the way he interacted with his captor. So let's move on. Leave and cleave. Leave and cleave. If we went back into Genesis chapter 2, verses 23 and 24, this is the first time this shows up in the Old Testament. And the man said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. Jesus repeated this essentially in Matthew 19, verses 4 through 6. And he answered and said, have you not read that he who made them from the beginning made them male and female? And said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and shall cleave to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh? So that they are no more two, but one flesh. Well, therefore, God hath joined together. Let not man put asunder. Leave and cleave. Leave the parents. Cleave to the spouse. Well, what kind of problems can arise? There's got to be a letting go of the child-parent and parent-child relationship in order for the man-wife union of marriage to exist. And what we've got to realize is that this union, the marriage union, is stronger than that of the parent-child relationship. It's stronger. It's supposed to be the one that's the dominant relationship within a person's life as they move forward through time from the point after marriage on. It's fitting for the child to seek the approval of the parent regarding the marriage relationship. And eloping denies the parent this right, and it really indicates problems exist within the parent, with the parent, or that the parent doesn't approve the spouse. But let me ask you something. When's the last time you've heard of a couple eloping? Years? Nobody that I went to high school with eloped. And I graduated nearly 15 years ago. You know that over half, well, I don't know if it's over half, but it's around half of couples that live together now do so outside of wedlock. Why elope and get married when everyone in society, you remember, everybody else is doing it, just lives together? Marriage is not valued in our society anymore. It's not valued in society, and so what happens is everybody's just sort of throwing marriage away, and the church is left to try to foster and teach marriage as something that's important. That's why we're having lessons like this, teach our young people how important it is. And for those of us that are within marriage, to help us to know how to teach the young people how important marriage is. What happens today is, folks, because, again, everybody else is doing it. That's what everybody says, speaking about the world at large and society at large. Boyfriend and girlfriend go on vacation together, and no one thinks anything of it within their work groups. Wouldn't be that way within church circles, hopefully. Sometimes boyfriend and girlfriend live together within their work circles. Nobody says anything about that. Wouldn't be that way within church circles, hopefully. This is not the standard that we should uphold. This is not what we should strive for. This is not what we should allow and condone. Leave and cleave. In order to enter into marriage, the child has to leave the parents and move forward into this marriage relationship. So what about problems with not leaving? What if the child is dependent on the parent? And maybe the child leans on the parent to bail the new couple out of financial problems. Well, this reinforces the problem of the lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh with respect to spending. You know, well, we'll just keep on buying, and then mom and daddy, they'll pay us. They'll give us a little money and help us out, instead of having to get themselves out of financial problems. What if the child slanders the spouse to the parent? Says, man, my husband, can you believe he did this? Or my wife, I can't believe she did this, talking to their own parents. Well, what does this do? Well, this undermines trust in the marriage. And what if the child won't move away from the parent? Now, I'm not saying it's wrong to live next to your parents, because if you've got good relationships, it's convenient, it's nice. But what if the child just simply won't move? Maybe they're leaning on the parent to help them with life's problems rather than leaning on God and Christ. Okay, well, what about more problems than not leaving? From the parent's point of view, what if the parent won't let go of the child? What if the parent tries to control the life choices of the child? Well, it's issues of pride on the part of the parents, think that they know what's best all the time. And if the child allows it, then they may not be able to handle their own problems. And all the problems that we face in life, every time we have trouble, what do? We learn. And that makes us better equipped to handle the next set of problems every time. So if the parent's always stepping in and taking care of things, then the child never matures, even as they go through their adult life. What if the parent attempts to parent the grandchildren? Well, this may prevent the actual parents from fulfilling their roles. And we want them to have all the responsibility of being parents, because there's nothing that changes life like having children. It's a wonderful thing. It makes you grow up in a hurry. What if the parent gets between the child and their spouse in disagreements? Well, this complicates communication between the child and his or her spouse. This is not what we need. Okay, well, what about cleaving? What does it mean to cleave? Well, cleave means to glue together, to tightly adhere. Each member of the marriage is to lean on their spouse for spiritual, emotional, and physical fulfillment. It means that we are together. Michelle and I, we go together. And it's that way spiritually. It's that way emotionally. No one knows me better than she does. Not even my parents. Now, it took a little while for it to get that way. Michelle and I dated for a year. And it took 2, 3, 4 years before we really reached that plane. But she knows me better than my parents do, emotionally, spiritually. Of course, you have the physical aspects of marriage. In Matthew 19 and verse 6, remember what this verse says. Wherefore, they are no more twain, but one flesh. What therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder. It is God that forms this union. It's not man, it's not a judge, not a preacher. It's God that forms this union. God that glues these two people together. God that causes the cleaving. Well, what about problems if we don't cleave? Well, this just does not reflect the nature of Christ and His bride. Trust within the marriage is not established. And fear will always exist that the marriage may fail because of felt lack of commitment. So if two people are not sticking together and they're not holding on to each other, then they may always feel like, you know, he may leave one day, or she may leave, or can't trust him. Got to pull together. It's God that forms that union, and we've got to live as if that union is strong. And resentment may exist with the in-laws who have a stronger relationship with the spouse than the husband or wife does. What if the marriage is sort of on rocky ground and for years the wife has really been close with her family and wouldn't ever let go? Or what if the husband for years has always been real close with his family and wouldn't ever let go? This is a known transition in life for the majority of people to leave home and get married. Now, there's some that don't get married, and there are some that don't get married until they're in their 40s. We know someone that's in that situation now. But it's a known transition. So what does that mean? That means that I've got that little girl back there, and we don't have many conversations about this for many years. But I know that down the line, I've got to give her up. All right, that's my responsibility to give her up. I've got to let go. So when that time comes, I want her to be as prepared as she can be to stand on her own. I want her to be able to let go of us. I don't like to talk about it a whole lot. I've got a few years left to go. Some of you are closer to that than I am. But we've got to be thinking and instilling those thoughts in our children and preparing them to let go so that they can form the kind of union that they need spiritually with the spouse. It should be prepared for on the part of the parent. Train the child to be independent enough to begin a new relationship. On the part of the parent, to be able to just let go yourself. And on the part of the child, to be ready to become an independent family unit in many, many ways. You know, I've met some people, some young ladies in the church out in Colorado. I had a chance to go out there and hold a meeting and met some very, very good Christian young ladies out there in their mid-20s. And they're kind of scratching their head thinking, well, I've got to 25 and I don't have a husband and what am I going to do? And in that particular part of the country, it's a very liberal society and it's a college town and there's a lot of folks that are very liberal in their lifestyles. And so finding a Christian spouse out there is a little different even than here. And they're real concerned about it. I mean, because they wanted to be a housewife and to have children and they're prepared for that. But they've got another challenge right now is that has not happened for them. And they're in their mid-20s. They're not married. And they sort of had the mindset they wanted someone to scoop them up and to prepare for them, provide for them, which is great, except now they're having to stand on their own feet. And they did not go to, they're going to college still, but they do not already have a degree. They're not able to provide their own income level at a real high level. And so they're kind of wondering, okay, how many years am I going to have to make it like this? You know, you can work at a restaurant while you're in college, but once you reach a point where you're sort of having to depend on yourself, you need a little higher level of income. What we need to think about, friends, when it comes to this, it's not only that we need to prepare our children to be able to move into a new relationship, but also prepare them so that they're able to be on their own if marriage does not happen until they're 30, until they're 28. Be able to be independent, providing for yourself. Proverbs chapter 22, verses 6 and 7. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train for this. Prepare. And the next verse, verse 7 says, the rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Now here we have a complete change in focus, except we've got these two verses back to back. And in Proverbs, you have that. You have a concept, a little bitty nugget of information, and another nugget of information that's totally unrelated. Except with these two concepts, they go together. Because yes, we should train our children in all walks of life, and we should also train them with respect to money. And so now we want to turn our attention to finances. It's a great segue for us to go into our last little topic, finances, and the problems that finances can cause within a marriage. I did a query with Google to find out what was the top marriage problems. And I looked at about 20 different lists of problems that would cause divorce, problems that would, well, things that would cause problems within marriage. And there was no single one at the top of all those 20 different lists. But this one was in everybody's top five. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. But godliness with contentment is great gain. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. And I've sort of abbreviated a few verses, a few extra words in there. Godliness with contentment. Contentment. That's what we've got to strive for. They that will be rich. There's nothing wrong with having money here. It's the love of money that's the root of all evil. But to have money is not wrong. We can have money. We can have possessions. But when our love is for that, and when we desire that, we desire more and more and more, then that becomes a major issue. Godliness with contentment is great gain. Proverbs 10, verse 15. But the rich man's wealth is his strong city. The destruction of the poor is their poverty. Rich man's wealth is his strong city. Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 12. For wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Over the last 3 years or so, I've spoke off and on money and money management and lifestyles and how we would live on this, and given some lessons like that here. I know you remember. Those lessons tend to be a little bit memorable for folks because they're a little bit different from the norm. And usually they strike a nerve with half of the audience, and some folks like it and some folks don't. And I've had folks tell me that they don't really agree with my thoughts on money. And that's fine. I'm not one to act like a genius or anything like that. But what I've tried to teach is that we should be content. And what we're seeing in our nation is that spending and spending and spending till you reach the very end of your limit does not work. It does not work. And we're seeing financial institutions getting broken. And we're seeing all kinds of problems with our whole society gearing up to provide a standard of living that's above what the average person can afford. I mean, really, and I don't know if anybody's got one, but who can afford a $52,000 vehicle? I mean, we might can buy it, and we may pay for it over 7 years, but really, and you know, that's one of the big problems with General Motors, is that's what they geared up to provide. And now we see General Motors and Ford and Chrysler really struggling. They're wanting a piece of this buyout, and everybody's wanting all this money. We got this because society as a whole went in the direction that we could not afford. Wisdom is a defense. Money is a defense. Money can protect us. This last verse, the rich man's wealth is his strong city. If we can manage our money well, we can have money to help when Murphy comes around, okay? When we have problems that happen, when the car breaks down, and at the same time the washing machine goes out, and at the same time somebody hits us that doesn't have insurance, and we've got to pay the $500 deductible, and at the same time we've got to go have an MRI because someone's having migraine headaches, and you got to pay another $500 deductible. When all those things add up, it can cause great problems, okay? And that's just simple, easy stuff that can happen to any of us. The rich man's wealth is his strong city. It can protect us. Money is a defense if we manage it well. But it can be an offense. It can tear us apart if we don't manage it well. Money is a good servant, but it is a poor master. Our financial lives can be affected by the lust of the eyes and the lust of the flesh and the pride of life. And we gain insight to where our heart truly is when we look at our bank account. Or we happen to write checks to a credit card company and we don't even know what's on the credit card. Or we happen to write checks to someone for property that we've got that we can't develop because we don't have enough extra money to build a house on it? Are we writing checks to someone to try to cover, you know, you can take it and run with it. What are we paying for? Where's our money going? Are we taking money and putting it aside for retirement? Are we taking money and giving a substantial part to the church, or are we giving what's left over? What's happening with our money? Loving God with all of our soul, which is that we would love Him with our whole life, the whole course of our life, with the direction of our life, would mean that we'd have our finances in order. If we love God with our soul, then that means, okay, 20 years down the road, I'm going to be prepared to be more alive in God's service and have more flexibility and more freedom 20 years down the road. And I'm going to live these next 20 years to reach that milestone. That's what I want in 20 years. That's loving God with our soul and living it out and doing it. That's loving God with our soul. And nothing shows up more in that respect than our money. Money and our child rearing. Both of those things really show what we do over the course of our lives. So when does financial planning begin? Well, it begins at any point when we sit down and take a look at things. But in the life of a child, as a person grows and matures from infancy, from a 2-year-old on up to a 52-year-old, at what point does it begin? It begins when our children learn contentment. If our children at a young age learn to want, we began to recognize something not long ago and we've stopped. We were, without thinking, buying Malia a little $1 toy every time we went to the store. And we didn't think anything of it because it was just a dollar. Okay? Big deal. But what we began to realize is she wasn't happy unless she got her $1 toy. And we had to quit. In fact, just the other day I had to tell her, I said, listen, this Dora balloon belongs here in the store and we have to leave it here. And we had to go home without it. We've got to teach our children contentment from a young age. And when our children learn to save and to give, we are teaching them financial planning. When young men and women learn the value of a dollar as it relates to the time needed to make it, do you know kids that will show up to their parents in the store and say, listen, I want this and this and this. Well, it's only $35. Come on. You know, have you ever seen that happen? I've seen it. I've heard it. When young people have no respect for the amount of time that it takes to make money. I worked from the time that I was either 14 or 15 in a concession stand and have worked ever since. And I went to school and worked too. And money doesn't come quickly. How long does it take when you're working in a concession stand to make $35? It takes a little while. When our kids learn to put those two things together, they begin to learn a better respect of money. What about for choosing a career? Financial wisdom for choosing a career. Well, first of all, think about this. What kind of life do you want to have? Do you want to have a life where you're busy all the time, but you're making tons of money? I know some fellas that are rolling in money, but they're working 80, 90 hours a week, going from home all the time. Is that what you want? Do you want to have the kind of life where the job tells you to move, you have to pick up and move across this country? I know folks that have had to do that. Is that what you want? Is that what's best? What kind of life do you want? Consider what kind of standard of living you want for your family. You know, money is not everything. But it's a defense. Do we want to choose a life and a lifestyle when we're young? Do we want to choose a career path that will enable us to provide for our family? Consider what kind of hours you want to work and consider what kind of hours certain careers require. I know a group of fine young men and they're in their mid to late 20s. And the only option for them to work in the area where they grew up is to work in a plant where the plant dictates their hours. And so if the plant says we're going to work 7-12s and we're going to do that for 3 months, they have no choice except to do that. Now, they could go find other work, but they may have to travel a good bit or they may have to take a substantial cut in pay. They didn't go on to school to get any better qualified to work in any other setting than that.
And so they're sort of locked into that.
Now, would they have chose that as their career? I don't know. But that's what they're locked into right now. Consider the job availability and the volatility in general, and especially in your area. You know, we're all facing a difficult time because we've got an economic turndown right now. And we know plants all around us. My granddad worked in a plant. My uncle works in a plant right now. I know many of you do or know people that do. And Mohawk down there in Roanoke has been shut down for 2 weeks. Nobody can do anything about it. The bills still keep coming. And that's my family that's in that situation, and they're struggling. Is that the kind of, young people, is that the kind of choice we want to make? You know, it's not a bad choice. It's a good career path, but we cannot control that. We can't, we're at someone else's mercy. Consider the labor intensity and the stress of careers. Now, I don't work very hard, but I did have a job that was very stressful. Very stressful. Thankfully, I've gotten out of that and doing something much less stressful now. But what do you want to have? Do you want to have something where you're really, really stressed out? Or do you want something where you're breaking your back all the time? We've got to consider those things. Consider the things as we look forward to life and make choices about our future. And allow these questions to narrow your options. You know, sometimes people, young people say, well, what do you want to do? What do you want to be? I want to be an astronaut. Well, great. Can't do that in Randolph County. Can't do that in Alabama unless, well, you might could do something up in Huntsville, but do you want to live in Huntsville? Okay. What do you want to do? Let's quit asking that question and let's ask, where do you want to live? What kind of life do you want to have? Because it does not matter what kind of career you choose. At some point, it's going to get either a little boring or a little stressful, or you're not going to like it because, and I'm not saying indefinitely, but all careers, no matter how much you love it, have got good days and bad days. And the people you work around will change with time. And the people you work around make a huge difference on how much you enjoy your job. You can do something you love and work with people that are just downer people, and you'll be miserable. And that's true in any profession. So don't look for fulfillment in life by a career choice. Build your life around a choice to be fulfilled outside of work, but let work pay the bills. Don't live to work, work to live. Financial wisdom for those that are unmarried. Prepare yourself to be a good provider for your family. Be diligent in achieving the required education or certification needed for that career choice. Strive not to incur debt along the way. Work hard at it. Work with a job. Try not to pile up. I know some people that had $120,000 in student loans when they got out of school. I know people that had more than that. $120,000, well, it was difficult for this person to buy a house. You know, had a good job. This girl had a good job, had good income, but she already had so much debt she couldn't buy a house. And so she was forced to rent. She wasn't married. She was forced to rent even though she had a good income. Be careful with that as we go through school process. Be financially ready to move ahead with marriage by an appropriate age. Be ready. Be able to provide. Be able to contribute. You know, I really felt for these girls out in Colorado area. I liked them a lot. Enjoyed being around them. But they were having a difficult time providing for themselves. Now, let's just think about this scenario. Michelle's staying at home right now. But what if something happened to me and I couldn't work? Could she go make enough money for us to keep up our standard of living? You know, that's why you buy insurance and things of that sort. But those are the kinds of things you need to think about. If my husband, you know, I'm speaking as a woman, but if my husband were to die, could I go to work and make enough money to support these two or three kids we've got? Those are things we need to think about, young people, as we are on the unmarried side of the equation. What about financial wisdom for the newly married, for those that are young? Live well within your means, with contentment. Don't strive to spend, don't spend every money, every dollar you make. Live well within your means with contentment and be prepared for the unexpected with an emergency fund, because two or three things are going to happen all at once. It's just guaranteed. It's going to happen. Now, whether it happens once a year or once every 3 years, but something's going to happen. You're going to have two or three things all at once, and you're going to have to pay out about $2,000 or $3,000 very unexpectedly. And are you going to have the money sitting there ready for that, or is it going to make you go further into debt? It's going to cause you problems.
where you've got to go get money, and then you owe more money, and it's just, you need to be prepared with an emergency fund. And try to eliminate debt as quickly as you can. Choose a home where the monthly payment is about 25% or less of your take-home pay. That allows you to have more free money to spend, more money to save, more money to give. But if you try to live a huge house payment, then you can be house poor. Yeah, you can make a payment on the house, but you can't do anything else. And develop a lifestyle around the idea of trying to have your wife stay at home with your children, or to have a situation where you can have a parent home a lot of the time, or, you know, maybe where you have grandparents that help out. I'm not wanting to down daycares at all. That's not what I'm saying. But we need to be as involved with our children as we can be. Involved with them as we can be. What about for those that already have families? Live well within your means with contentment. Doesn't matter where we are. If we've got the buy it bug, it'll get us in trouble. It'll get us in hot water. If we start having financial problems as a family, we will begin to have marriage problems as a couple. Be prepared for the unexpected. It happens. It happens all the time. We've spent $800 on a trip to the emergency room for Malia to get a piece of an almond sucked out of her lung that she inhaled. And Michelle had to have a little dental work. That's going to end up costing us a little bit because it changed jobs and the plan wouldn't pay till we'd been with them a year. That's aggravating. And then we had to have something else done, and that you got to pay that insurance deductible. So we're looking at, you know, we didn't plan to have, let's say that'll be nearly $2,000 in deductibles this year. We didn't plan on that. Okay, that happens. It happens all the time. Be prepared for those kinds of things. Eliminate debt quickly and prepare for future events, whether it's retirement, whether it's college or whatever it is. Prepare for that in advance. And be ready to give of your time and your talents as well as your money for the cause of Christ. Live in a way that you've got a little extra to give. Don't be giving. You know, we don't want to live up our life all about us and then give Christ a little bit of extra. Let's put Christ in there first. Let's put Him in there first. Plan for that. Give. Not only our money, but give of our time. Give of our energy. Wisdom is a defense, and money is a defense. But the excellency of knowledge is that wisdom giveth life to them that have it. Wisdom. Seek wisdom. Seek wisdom. That's what this lesson's about. For our young people in the audience, it's about showing, here are a few principles about communication, about leave and cleave, about finances, issues that are very major problems in marriage. Have some wisdom, learn about these things, prepare for these things as you move forward, make good choices so that you can have that strong relationship that's the image of Christ and the church within your marriage. And friends, if we're already in this marriage, we've already got that union, let's strive to do all we can to eliminate these problems, these challenges. Let's master these challenges. And you know what? When we work hard and we get our communication where it's tip-top notch, it's like that milk that I spilled. If we don't continue to put energy into keeping the house clean, it'll get dirty. It'll get bad again. Get your finances in order and you don't pay attention to it, you start spending money like crazy again, you can get back in a mess again. Got to always mop the floor about once a week to keep it looking good, don't you, ladies, or whoever mops the floor. Okay? You got to always do that. And within marriage, we always have to work toward these things because these issues and so many more can continually erode a relationship. Let's do all we can to have strong relationships because it's those relationships that will shine as lights to others and inspire them to be strong within their marriages, and so that the church can continue to perpetuate itself, growing on the strength of the family unit. Where are we today with respect to Christ? Are we separated from Christ? Are we in His loving care? Maybe we're separated from Him by sin because we've never named His name. We've never confessed that we believe He is the Son of God. Never given ourselves to be baptized. Today we have an opportunity for that. Maybe today we need to ask for our brothers and sisters to pray for us so that we can be forgiven and restored. We make opportunity for both as we stand and sing. 5:16.
297. Jeremiah 2:27. 297. So the first